let's get started.
Wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioToYou.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioToYou.com. Shutters Inc. with Charlton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 56 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioToYou.com. With me on the line once again from Melbourne, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Bruce. I've actually able to make it to talk to you this week. Sorry, everybody, for last week, but my schedule just, you know, went crazy. So my apologies for not being able to give you our normal every weekly episode of Shutters Inc.
May these things happen.
Well, here we are, mate. Here we are. I mean, it's, you know, we better not start getting complaints because this is a voluntary service, and I'll just, you know, otherwise, you know, we'll start getting angry down here.
You don't want that.
Oh, you don't want Australia getting angry, mate. Oh, no way. You know, we're just too much of a threat.
That's it. On a slightly serious note, the ongoing saga of the Gorillapod, I've been in touch with my contact at Joby again. I actually sent him a fairly heavy-handed email yesterday, and much to my surprise, I got an email almost instantaneously, like within about 5 minutes, back from him. And he said, look, really sorry for the delay. We've just been super busy because it's heading into Christmas. We're shipping Gorillapods left, right, and center. He said that your Gorillapods have been shipped this week from the US. So I'd like to say I believe that, but given the lack of communication so far, I'm inclined to say I'll believe it when I see it. So again, my sincerest apologies to everyone who entered the competition, and particularly to the winners who are hanging out to receive their Gorillapods. I got an email from Bob Fisher a couple of days ago saying he's heading off to Bali for Christmas and was hoping he could take it with him. And Bob, look, I will do my best to get it to you, mate, but I cannot offer you any guarantees at this point in time. I must say, this has been a bit of a disappointing exercise on my behalf because, you know, I've run competitions on the podcast before and never had any problems, and this time it's just sort of been a bit of a debacle. So my sincerest apologies, people. I'm working on it. I'm on their case, and as soon as they arrive, believe me, I'll get them shipped out. So
in the end, look, I people, you all know we're up front, gang, so we're just trying to get
Absolutely.
It organized for you, you know. So.
Absolutely.
Bear with us. Not these things just sort of don't they come out of the woodwork, don't they? And you don't expect them.
I can understand their point of view, though. Like, they probably are fairly busy this time of year. You know,
of course
they would be just shipping crazy all over the planet. So
because it's great. I want to get my hands on one myself.
Yeah,
I wish, you know,
absolutely.
They are a great little product. So please, yeah, bear with us. You know, we're being upfront with you. There's no funny business going on. You know,
nope.
I mean, except for that Maserati you bought last week, Bruce. What's with that?
Oh, mate, it goes.
It goes, mate. Yeah, it goes. It really goes.
In my dreams, it goes.
Well, I wouldn't buy one. Look, I think if I had the money, I'd buy cherry red 1962 Fender Stratocasters.
Oh, okay.
Or really, really, really nice cameras, but never cars.
Yeah, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah, Maseratis are great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Actually, my personal dream car is an Aston Martin.
Oh, yes. You like the James Bond.
Yeah.
Yes. My Aston Martin. The Lagonda.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it. A couple of weeks ago, I was driving into the city, and I found myself sandwiched between two Aston Martins. I had one in front of me and one behind me. One was a DB8 and one was a Vantage.
Oh, there
and,
you go.
I was just in heaven.
What was that song by the Everly Brothers? Dream when I'm
That's about as close as I get, I think.
that's because you run this free podcast, mate.
That's
you
it,
know
yeah.
You're doing everything for free. I'm in the same boat. It's funny, I drive a car that was made by the same factory that made the airplanes that bombed Australia. So
is that Mitsubishi?
Mitsubishi, yeah. Yeah, funny what happens 60 years later, and we're driving their cars.
Oh dear. On to photography. What are we going to talk about this week?
Well, a lot of people, we had a few inquiries about flash, and I know, Paul, you like to photograph all the First Nations people, the culture to which I believe you belong, and you've had some inquiries about using flash with those festivals, etc.
And you have to share these emails with me, mate, because I don't see them now.
Oh, really?
So what did he say?
Well, Paul has a problem because he photographs a lot of festivals, with First Nations people of America dancing and those kind of... It's awesome photography potential there. And right. Some of Paul's pictures are just absolutely fabulous. The problem is that sometimes he doesn't get close enough for the flash to take effect, or perhaps that using flash seems to take away from the nature of the event light-wise, cast heavy shadows behind, or it tends to flatten the appearance of the image, all that kind of thing. And he's absolutely right. So I thought what I would talk about today, and we have talked about this to a degree in podcasts before, but you can never sort of talk about something like this too often, or you can never over-clarify. So I thought I'd just talk about some of the principles and problems of using flash that maybe we should just straighten out. Mm-hmm. So that you, Paul, and so many of our listeners can take a whole new look at this invention. I've often bagged flash on the podcast, and perhaps I shouldn't, because I'm not really bagging flash. I love flash. What I'm bagging is its constant misuse. Yeah. flash if someone hadn't invented the xenon tube, stuck a charge of electricity through xenon gas, we would never have known what flash was. Because it's just a fabulous pocket light. You pull it out of your gadget bag and there's this light, and you can use it any old where, any old time, for any old purpose. But the problem is that when most people throw it on top of their camera, stick it on the hot shoe, they now assume that, that it's the boss. I've put the flash on. And so it is now the source of light. And that is a completely incorrect assumption. The flash does not now need to become the source of light. It can be supplemental to any source of light you're working with.
Yeah.
And there, if we can get that through our heads, we can now start to say, okay, well, that means that I can use flash to come in under the light that I'm using, to just slightly come in over the light I'm using, to work with the light, the ambient light that I have available to me. If we can wrap our heads around that, suddenly we start to say, okay, well, there's a whole bunch of opportunities here. It's only when we assume that the light must be the new light source, the new boss, is the flash. And we all know that's true, because married men know that the wife is the boss and everything else is secondary to that. Now there's I've listed four basic ways that we can think this way, and that is A, to reduce our shutter speed. Normally when we put on a flash, we think, okay, I've got to go to the synchronization speed, which might be, I don't know, a 250th of a second or whatever it might be on your camera. That's now the shutter speed that I have to use, because that is the synchronization speed for my camera with flash, which is incorrect. Any shutter speed below that, 125th, 60th, 30th, yep, whatever it might be, will also synchronize. So if you think about that, what that means is that now, if I reduce the shutter speed, I can incorporate some of my available light with the flash, because I'm allowing in the time that the shutter is open, I'm allowing for two things: the ambient light to burn in into the image, onto my film or onto my sensor, and my flash as well. Now let's go to B, reduce the output of the flash. Sometimes we just put the flash on and we switch it to auto or TTL or whatever, and the flash does what it's told. It provides the light that the factory has established by its parameters to output, but it doesn't need to do that. Most flashes these days have some means of reducing the output. And of course, this will vary from system to system, flash gun to flash gun. But you can reduce the output of the flash so that it comes in underneath your available light. Yep. You can, and a classic example of this would be fill flash outside. A lot of photographers think that that using the flash TTL will make for perfect fill flash. But remember, these things are all set up according to certain factory parameters, and the light varies from country to country. Light varies from day to day and from circumstance to circumstance. But I know Galen Rowell, who has unfortunately died a few years back tragically in a plane crash. He often used flash in his landscape photography, and and this was often in overcast conditions, or late afternoon and morning light conditions. And he would set his flash at 1.7 stops under, so that it was there, but not overtaking the ambient light. But it made a difference just by slightly filling in shadows and adding a little punch of color where he needed it. I was working with him back in 1997. We were down in Tasmania together. He was down there to give a lecture and I was down there to hear it. And we managed to get a day shooting together, which was just fabulous. And we were up early in the morning and he was photographing a tree, just, you know, from a very low perspective, shooting up towards this tree that was, you know, coming up and being lit by the sun. And he got his flash out, and I hadn't thought of using flash, but, you know, naturally I was right next to him and, you know, copying everything he did, plagiarizing to the max. And he got out his flash, which had an orange cellophane over the front of it, actually, just an elastic band. And he set his flash at 1.7 stops under, and he just, you know, added a little bit of fill flash under this tree. The orange cellophane was so that the warming effect. It was, yeah, a morning light was warm, and he didn't want to bring in, you know, this cold blue light of flash. So he put an orange cellophane over the front. You know, just simple things, but he utilized flash, but he made it supplemental and not necessarily, you know, to overwhelm the image. And if you look at his images, a lot of them he used flash, but you hardly notice, unless of course you see the picture without flash, and you realize, I see the nuance of light that he's introduced there. And he was very clever in that respect. So it's if we can get that idea that we don't, you know, that you can reduce the output, use it to come in under, to fill, we are already ahead of ourselves. You can also soften the nature of flash by diffusing it. Like we just talked about with Galen, he both softened and changed the color output of the flash just by getting a bit of orange cellophane. Mm. You know, like you buy that down at the local store. So with an elastic band, you know, real high-tech stuff. but, I mean, you can soften the output of it just by filtering it. You can buy proper diffusers that you pop over the top of your flash. You can, you know, the LumaQuest, they make them. You can use a bit of lens cleaning tissue to soften the nature of the harshness of flash. You can also soften it by bouncing off a wall, off a reflector, off a ceiling, so that, you know, it spreads the light around a little bit more. It doesn't need to be straight on. I'm sure most of us already know that. Or D, all of the above. There's no reason that you can't combine this knowledge, reduced shutter speed, reduced output, softened value all together when you're using flash. It just comes with a little bit of practice and a little bit of understanding. So, Paul, let's look at your situation. You're photographing festivals where maybe you have a little bit of distance to cover. So you're pushing that output a little bit and you're opening your aperture right up. And what you're going to get is because you're at such a distance, probably very long extended shadows behind your subject because the flash has, you know, lit them from your angle. And then you also sort of tend to flatten the form. You lose all the dimension of your subject because you're illuminating from the front. Now, every time we do that, we flatten, you know, features. The only way that we can get any idea of form and even texture is often by lighting from a side, you know, rather than from the front. Frontal lighting is good, and it's often used in high glamour portraiture and that kind of thing, but not in this way. So my suggestion would be use your flash also supplementally. Yours is not an easy situation, but I would try to use as much available light if I possibly could. And I don't know what lenses you have, Paul, but if you had an 80-200 2.8 or a 180-2.8 or any of those lenses, an 85 1.8, these are lenses that I use in those situations too, and with flash, to combine both, you know, the ambient light that I have, and maybe if I need to, you know, add a little bit of punch, use the flash to just to fill in. Yours is not an easy situation, but if you think about those ways that we've discussed of using flash, then you might realize, you might find that it, you know, it will help you. The problem that Paul mentioned was that, you know, his pictures become a little flat. And this is often the case with, as we've said, straight flash. It removes any sense of dimension and form and any sense of texture by just lighting from the front. It doesn't give us any shadow to give us an idea of texture or an idea of form. So that's going to happen with your images, Paul, and with any pictures that we take of festivals or whatever, and we're just illuminating with flash from the front. So classic, and also it's going to change the nature of what you see. Often we take this, you know, we don't understand this, that, and I've had this happen many times. I've, for instance, set up a bride in a window, you know, and there she is, and we've got the window light spilling through the net curtains, and she's standing, and she's beautifully lit, nice head and shoulder portrait, and, you know, mum walks into the room, and, it's so beautiful, and she wants to get her camera and take a picture, and the first thing mum's going to do, you can bet your bottom dollar, is get her camera out and turn her flash on.
Yep.
You know, and what she doesn't realize is that she's walked into a room, and yes, it's beautiful. You know, her daughter's all dressed up for the wedding and she looks gorgeous. But what she doesn't realize is that what stirred the emotion was the nature of the light from the window spilling across her daughter's face and gown. Turning the flash on and just boof, illuminating it from the front is just going to take that all away. And mum's going to get her picture back and wonder why hers doesn't look like mine. That's fine, because I don't mind her worrying about that. I'd rather she know that, you know, I'm on the job. But she won't realize that what she was impressed by was the nature of the light. So, and that's really where we start to understand flash, that it can be a supplemental form of light. And, you know, we use it indoors and outdoors. Let's throw into this equation the rear curtain mode or night mode that a lot of compact cameras have, wherein the shutter speed is open for about the shutter is open for about a second, and then at the end of that exposure, the flash fires. Now, if you apply that in your, let's say, Paul, in your photography with photographing the festivals that you go to, if you want to convey movement, that is a great way to do it. You just have to get past the idea of being frightened of blur or motion blur. But to be honest with you, it all depends on what kind of detail you want. If you want to convey the idea of movement, of people dancing, of arms turning and legs moving, then there's nothing wrong with a 1 second exposure that is then filled in at the end with flash to give you color and sharpness. Rear curtain sync flash or night mode flash is a great way of conveying movement, but also giving it that punch of sharpness at the end of the exposure, which is what it does. So
can I just ask a question on that?
Yeah.
What's the difference between, like, from an end image point of view, what difference does it make whether the flash goes off first and you then have a long exposure, or whether you have the long exposure with the flash at the end?
A lot would depend on what's moving in the image. Let's say, for instance, you've got someone riding a bicycle across the screen. If the person is going from the left to the right, and the flash fires first, you'll have the sharp image and then followed by a blur moving forward. Whereas if the flash fires at the end, you'd have the blur and the
leading
sharp image at the end.
Yep.
So it all depends on the effect that you want. But usually, you know, rear curtain sync is the way that most photographers prefer. And it was something that actually started to be used very cleverly in the late 1980s with National Geographic photographers. They actually they overused it, to be honest with you, and we all got sick of it. You know, they were sure to photograph wildlife.
The same thing happens in audio production, let me tell you. Someone discovers a new trick and then everyone uses it.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. But it all taught us the value of it, and I use it a lot. And what I'm going to do this week is send you, Bruce, a whole bunch of images showing the difference in how flash has been used effectively, but not as the boss, as a supplemental form of light. If you have to use it as the boss, then find a way of making sure that you're not you know, if it is the only light source, if you're in such a condition whereby you have to use flash, there may be some times when you have to use it straight on. It's just the way it is. Even I do that if I'm photographing events of some kind, you know, snapshot style photography that people need for newsletters or whatever. But more often than not, I will very rarely use flash straight on if I don't have to. So I'll send you some images. We'll put them up on audiotu.com.
Yep.
And we'll show people, you know, how rear curtain sync. I've got some images there that we can show how that works of some dancers in a festival in Vietnam. And of course, some bridal photography where I've used flash and you wouldn't know it. You just wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
And then I also want to show you the difference between straight flash, overhead bounce flash, and side bounce flash, where you've bounced the flash off a nearby white wall. And the difference in how the face appears in each of those three pictures is enough to say, boy, I got to start using my flash more cleverly.
Yeah. You know? That actually reminds me, I've got a shot that I'll dig out, a shot that I took of Max when he was 8 months old, where he was sitting on our bed. This is in our last house, and as he was facing me, there was ambient light coming in onto the right side of his face, or the left side as I saw him. And I had a wardrobe to my right, which was painted with cream.
Right.
And I bounced the flash off that, and I, yeah, just managed to get a really beautiful balance between the flash and the ambient. So I'll dig that shot out, because I was really happy with that.
Great. That's up there for thinking. And that's what we should be doing with flash. Not just saying, well, it's on the camera now and it's, you know, meet the new boss. It's not the case. If we can cleverly use it like you have, I mean, you used a situation, you saw it and you thought, oh, I'm going to give this a try. You understood the situation from a lighting perspective.
Yeah.
That's one of the hardest things for photographers often to wrap their heads around. But once you do, the whole world of how flash can be utilized to enhance your image but not overwhelm it is now, well, the world's your oyster lighting wise. It really is. It really is. So I hope these tips have helped. I've spoken in principles because that's the best way to speak.
Yeah.
You know, you're all intelligent enough to say, oh, I get it now, and use it in your own personal circumstances.
It's the difference between giving the man a fish and teaching the man how to fish.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. Now you can go down, you know. Of course, me teaching anyone to fish would be like, you know, I don't think so, Tim. You know, I'm 43 years old and I've never caught a fish in my life. So I don't think that I'd be, you know, photographed a few, but never caught any, you know. So I think my dad, who is the worst fisherman in the world, probably has put me off fishing for life. So
right.
But you're absolutely right.
Something you said earlier on reminded me back in the 90s when I had my first Minolta, my Dynax 7000i. I made for myself, out of a piece of, you know, stiff white cardboard, a reflector that I could mount on the top of my flash, just with an elastic band wrapped around it. And I might actually create a PDF template and some instructions on how to create it. And now that I've got my new flash, I might actually build one again, because it was really handy. And basically it was just flared so that it, you know, it sort of flared outwards. And I would just, you know, stick it on the top of the flash and then, you know, put a lucky band around it and then tilt the flash upwards. But the flash would then fire into this hood and then reflect out frontways, if you understand my description. So I will endeavour to do that before the weekend and put a template up if people want to try that.
That would be great. And it is a great way of... all of these means, you know, we can use... It's just a matter of thinking. The things I've used to diffuse flash, you know, toilet paper, table napkins,
stockings,
my own palm. I've used my hand, you know. I've used just put my hand, I've flipped the flash up like you said, and just used my hand to bounce the flash away. I mean, it's a flesh tone, so it didn't really matter too much.
Yeah.
And anything to soften the output, the hard output of the flash. So I suppose what we're saying, Bruce, isn't we, is just think about it. You know, use your imagination in ways to use flash so that it's not the boss. Don't let it become the boss. It's your tool. It is there. It's a creative tool. It's light in your pocket. Just pull it out and use it as you see fit. Don't don't suddenly think that it has to become the light source.
I think one thing that we haven't mentioned is probably that if you do start bouncing or, you know, deflecting the light coming out of the flash, remember that you may need to increase the output to allow for that, because sometimes that, you know,
absolutely
sucks up some of the light.
And if you're shooting digitally, of course,
you get instant feedback,
which is fabulous. Flash has always been one of those things whereby, you know, gee, I hope this works in terms of film. And, you know, after a while, you realize that it does. But, you know, you go through a few mistakes first. But with digital, you know immediately, and it is a real lifesaver. So that's great. So, but you're right. If you do need to, because the wall will absorb some of the light, or the ceiling will absorb some of the light, just be careful of that. For sure. Good point. Now, if I can just answer Bob's question before we leave. Bob Fisher, thanks again for your email, Bob. You tell us that you're off to Bali, which we said earlier, and you're after a little camera that you can carry around, something I highly recommend, mate, good thinking, for under $200. Now, the Canon CyberShot, I'm not sure which one you're talking about, is the one that you've got your little eye on, but you say you're still confused about the megapixel thing. It only has 5, but I'm pretty sure that should be sufficient. Yes, I'm sorry, but Bob, really, you're worrying about stuff you don't need to worry about. 5 is plenty. Do you remember when the Nikon D1 came out in 1999 and photographers went crazy? It was $10,000 in Australia, that camera, and it had 3.2 megapixels.
Woo-hoo!
And people were rapt, and they were shooting front covers with it and the whole bit, you know, and it did produce awesome images. Let's not get caught up in the megapixel thing. 5 is plenty. It'll give you enough detail. If you need to upsize, you've got enough pixels there to throw more pixels at. You've got enough detail. I was at an expo yesterday speaking all day, and I had so many people come up to me afterwards and say, oh, look, there's so many cameras here. You know, which one should I buy, and how many megapixels do I need? There is so much more to quality in your image than pixels. Yes, pixels are necessary, but you know, there's exposure systems and lenses and all those other things, which we've spoken about in podcasts before. So, Bob, 5 is plenty, mate. And if you like the Canon CyberShot and you can get it for under $200, you're rocking. You go and buy that thing. That's about as simple as I can make it.
Absolutely. You know, for anyone who hasn't ever considered it, think of how many pixels are in a 3-megapixel image. Mm. You've got, you know, 1,500 one way by 2,000 the other way, give or take.
Yeah.
So if you've got 2,000 pixels in one direction, at 300 pixels per inch, that's almost 7 inches.
Yes.
And the other way, you've got 1,500 pixels, so at 300 pixels an inch, that's 5 inches.
Yep.
So even off 3 megapixels, you can produce a 5x7 without any degradation to the resolution of the image that was captured.
And that's if you want to print.
Is that correct, Mats?
Absolutely correct. And that's if you want to print at 300 DPI.
Yeah.
I know photographers who go down to 200 or 150.
Yeah.
And that's without. I mean, you can then upsize that image quite effectively in Photoshop or in other upsizing, you know,
utilities
software.
Yep.
You know, because you've got enough pixels there, you've got enough details. All it needs to do is throw more pixels at it, so we don't get jagged edging, you know, as we enlarge. So, you know, let's not get caught up in pixels only. I get so many people freaking out over the pixel thing, and it really isn't necessary.
Yeah,
just not necessary.
Absolutely.
Not these days.
Okay, Shelton, thank you very much for another informative week.
My pleasure.
And
thanks
we'll
all
just,
for bearing with us.
We'll let everybody know that this will be the second last episode of Shutters Inc. for this year.
The penultimate Shutters Inc.
If you say so. So next week when Shelton and I record, that will be the last one for the year. I'm taking about 6 weeks off from podcasting, like from all my podcasts, just because I need a break.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going up to the Gold Coast for 2.5 weeks to see my mum and spend some time with her.
Lovely.
And we will be back. I actually haven't spoken to you about this, Shelton. I'll be back in Sydney around about the 7th of January. So if you're around about the 10th or 11th, that sort of midweek, if you're ready to record, then we can resume then. Or if you want to have a longer break, we can leave it till a bit later.
No, I'll be back. And
you'll be around?
My fans need me.
Of course they do.
So, you know, I have to be loyal to them.
Okay, so you can expect that after next week's episode, we'll be off until mid-January. So.
Terrific. No worries.
However, the one exception to that will be that if I do receive the Gorillapods after we've recorded next week's episode, then I will put out a special announcement on the feed to let people know that, yes, they've arrived and, yes, they're being shipped or whatever. So,
might I suggest that if you're a newcomer to Shutter Zinc, that you, if you're, you know, you miss us over that 2 or 3 weeks period or whatever, or however long we're away.
Go and do some catch up.
There's 56 podcasts there. You know, go back and catch up on some early ones. There's some good stuff in those early ones.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, mate. You have a good week.
You too, mate.
I'll talk with you next week.
Thanks to everyone, and we'll see you all next week.
Yep. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotou.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
audiotou.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control V to bookmark.
audiotou.com.